This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents Shelter in Place by Nora Roberts. Performed by January Lavoie. In memory of my grandmother with the bright red hair. Part 1. Innocence Lost. No acquisitions of guilt can compensate the loss of that solid inward comfort of mind, which is the sure companion of innocence and virtue. Nor can in the least balance the evil of that horror and anxiety which, in their room, guilt introduces into our bosoms. Henry Fielding. Chapter 1. On Friday, July 22, 2005, Simone Knox ordered a large Fanta, orange, to go with her popcorn and Swedish fish. The choice, her standard night at the movies fare, changed her life, and very likely saved it. Still, she'd never drink Fanta again. But at that moment, she only wanted to settle down in the theater with her two best friends forever and lose herself in the dark. Because her life, currently and absolutely for the rest of the summer, and maybe for all time, sucked beyond infinity. The boy she loved, the boy she'd dated exclusively for 7 months, 2 weeks, and 4 days, the boy she'd imagined cruising through her upcoming senior year with, hand in hand, heart to heart, had dumped her. In a text. Done wasting time, 'cause I got to be with somebody ready to be all the way with me, and that's not you, so we are done. See you. Certain he couldn't have meant it. She'd tried to call him, but he didn't answer. She'd texted 3 times, humiliating herself. Then she'd gone to his MySpace page. Humiliation was too weak a word for what she suffered. Traded in the old defective model for a hot new one. Simone out. Tiffany in. Shook off a loser, and I'll be rolling through the summer and into senior year with the hottest girl in the class of 2006. His post, with pictures, had already generated comments. She might have been smart enough to know he'd ordered his friends to say mean, ugly things about her, but that didn't lessen the sting. Or the embarrassment. She grieved for days. She wallowed in the comfort and righteous anger of her two closest friends. She raged at her younger sister's taunts, dragged herself to her summer job and the weekly tennis lessons at the club that her mother insisted on. A text from her grandmother made her sniffle. Cece might be meditating with the Dalai Lama in Tibet, rocking it out with the Stones in London, or painting in her studio on Tranquility Island. But she had a way of finding out anything and everything. It hurts now, and the pain's real, so hugs, my treasure. But give it a few weeks, and you'll realize he's just another asshole. Kick butt, and namaste. Simone didn't think Trent was an asshole, though both Tish and me agreed with Cece. Maybe he'd tossed her aside, and in a really mean way, just because she wouldn't do it with him. She just wasn't ready to do it. Besides, Tish had done it with her ex-boyfriend after the junior prom, and twice more, and he'd dumped her anyway. The worst was, she still loved Trent, and in her desperate 16-year-old heart, knew she'd never love anyone else ever again. Even though she'd torn out the pages of her journal where she'd written her future names, Mrs. Trent Woolworth, Simone Knox Woolworth, S.K. Woolworth, ripped them to shreds, then burned them along with every photo she had of him in the patio fire pit during a girl power ceremony with her friends, she still loved him. But, as me pointed out, She had to live, even though part of her just wanted to die. So she let her friends drag her to the movies. Anyway, she was tired of sulking in her room, and she really didn't want to slump around the mall with her mother and little sister, so the movies won. Me won, too, as it was her turn to pick, so Simone was stuck with some science fiction deal called The Island Me was crazy to see. Tish didn't mind the pick. As a future actress, she felt that experiencing movies and plays was both a duty and pre-career training. Plus, Ewan McGregor ranked in Tish's top 5 movie boyfriends.
Let's get seats. I want good ones.
Me, small, compact, with dark, dramatic eyes and a thick wedge of black hair, gathered her popcorn, no fake butter, her drink, and the peanut M&Ms she favored. Me had turned 17 in May, dated sporadically as she currently preferred science to boys, and skimmed just above the nerd line only because of her prowess as a gymnast and solid slot on the cheerleading squad. A squad unfortunately captained by one Tiffany Bryce, boyfriend stealer and slut.
I need the ladies.
Tish, double fake butter popcorn, a Coke, and Junior Mints, pushed her snacks at her friends.
I'll find you.
Don't fool around with your face and hair,
Me warned her.
Nobody can see them anyway once the movie starts.
And she was already perfect, Simone thought, as she juggled Tish's popcorn on the way to one of the 3 theaters in the Down East Mall Cineplex. Tish had long, smooth, silky, chestnut brown hair, with professional golden highlights because her mother wasn't stuck in 1950 whatever. Her face, Simone loved studying faces, a classic oval added flirty charm with dimples, and the dimples flirted often as Tish always found something to smile about. Simone figured she'd smile a lot too if she'd turned out tall and curvy with bright blue eyes and dimples. On top of everything, Tish's parents totally supported her ambition to pursue acting. She'd hit the jackpot in Simone's mind. Looks, personality, brains, and parents who actually had a clue. But Simone loved Tish anyway. The 3 of them already had plans. Secret ones for now, because Simone's parents completely did not have a clue, to spend the summer after graduation in New York. Maybe they'd even move there. It had to be more exciting than Rockport, Maine. Simone figured a sand dune in the Sahara had to be more exciting than Rockport, Maine. But New York? Bright lights? Hordes of people? Freedom? Me could study to be a doctor at Columbia. Tish could study acting and go on auditions. And she could study something. Something that wasn't law, as her own clueless parents wanted. Not surprising, and so lame and cliched because her father was a big-shot lawyer. Ward Knox would be disappointed, but that's how it had to be. Maybe she'd study art and become a famous artist like Cece. That would freak her parents out awesomely. And, like Cece, she'd take and discard lovers at her whim, when she was ready to do it. That would show Trent Woolworth.
Come out,
Me ordered, giving her an elbow bump.
What? I'm right here.
No, you're in the Simone Brood Zone. Come out. Join the world.
Maybe she liked it in the SBZ, but
I have to open the door with the power of my mind because my hands are full.
Okay, done. I'm back. The mind of Simone Knox is an awesome thing to behold. I must use it for good, and not use it to melt Tiffany into a puddle of slut goo.
You don't have to, anyway. Her brain's already a puddle of slut goo.
Friends, Simone thought, always knew the right thing to say. She would rejoin the world with Me, and Tish, whenever Tish stopped playing with her already perfect face and hair and came out, and leave the SBZ behind. A Friday night opening meant she walked into a theater already half full. Me grabbed three seats dead center, took the third one in from the aisle so Simone, still heart tender, could take the one between her and Tish, whose longer legs earned the aisle seat. Me shifted in her seat. She'd already calculated they had 6 minutes until the lights dimmed.
You've got to go to Allie's party tomorrow night.
The SBZ beckoned.
I'm not ready for a party. And you know Trent's going to be there with that slut-goo-brain Tiffany. That's the point, Sim. If you don't go, everybody's going to think you're, like, hiding out, that you're not over him.
I am, and I'm not.
The point, Mia insisted, you don't give him the satisfaction. You go with us. Tish is going with Scott, but he's cool. And you wear something amazing. Let Tish do your makeup because she's got the skills. And you act like, who? What? Him? You know, you're so over that. You make a statement.
Simone felt the SBZ pulling her.
I don't think I can face it. Tish is the actress, not me.
You played Rizzo in Grease for the Spring musical. Tish was awesome as Sandy, but you were an equally awesome Rizzo.
Because I've had dance lessons and can sing a little.
You sing great, and you did great. Be Rizzo at Allie's party. You know, all confident and sexy and up yours.
I don't know, me. But she could sort of imagine it.
And how Trent, seeing her all confident and sexy and up yours, would want her again. Then Tish rushed in, dropped down, gripped Simone's hand.
You're not going to freak.
Why would I? Oh, no. Please.
The sluts putting on fresh lip gloss, and the creeps hanging outside the ladies like a good dog.
Crap.
Me curled her fingers around Simone's arm.
Maybe they're going to one of the other movies.
No, they're coming here, because that's what my life is.
Me tightened her grip.
Don't even think about leaving. He'd see you and you'd look and feel like a loser. You're not a loser. This is your dress rehearsal for Allie's party.
She's going?
Tish's dimples flashed and flickered.
You talked her into it? We're working on it. Just sit.
Me angled herself just enough.
You're right. They're coming in. Just stay.
She hissed, as Simone's arm trembled under her hand.
You don't even notice them. We're right here.
Right here. Now and forever.
Tish echoed, giving Simone's hand a squeeze.
We're a wall of disdain. Got it?
They walked by. The blonde with the tumble of curls and snugly cropped jeans. And the golden boy. Tall. So handsome, quarterback of the championship Wildcats. Trent gave Simone the slow smile that had once melted her heart and deliberately ran a hand down Tiffany's back, letting it slide to her butt and linger there. Tiffany turned her head as Trent whispered in her ear and looked over her shoulder, smirked with her perfect, freshly glossed lips. Broken-hearted, her life a Trentless void. Simone still had too much of her grandmother in her to take that kind of insult. She smirked right back and shot up her middle finger. Me let out a snorting giggle.
Way to go, Rizzo.
Though Simone's broken heart thudded, she made herself watch as Trent and Tiffany sat three rows ahead and immediately began to make out.
All men want sex,
Tish said wisely.
I mean, why wouldn't they? But when that's all they want, they're not worth it. We're better than she is.
Me passed Tish her junior mints and coke.
Because that's all she's got.
You're right.
Maybe her eyes stung a little, but there was a burning inside her heart, and the burn felt like healing. She handed Tish her popcorn.
I'm going to Allie's party.
Tish let out a laugh, deliberately mocking and loud. Enough to make Tiffany jerk. Tish shot Simone a grin.
We'll rule that party.
Simone clamped her popcorn between her thighs so she could link hands with her friends.
I love you guys.
By the time the previews ended, Simone had stopped watching the silhouettes three rows down. Mostly. She'd expected to brood through the movie, actually planned on it, but found herself caught up. Ewan McGregor was dreamy, and she liked how strong and brave Scarlett Johansson came across. But 15 minutes in, she realized she should have gone to the bathroom with Tish, though that would have been a disaster with lip gloss Tiffany in there. Or she should have taken it a lot easier on the Fanta. 20 minutes in, she gave up.
I've got to pee,
she whispered.
Come on,
me whispered back.
I'll be fast. You want me to go with you?
She shook her head at Tish, gave her what was left of the popcorn and Fanta to hold. She shuffled by, strode quickly up the aisle. After making the turn to the right, she hurried to the ladies, shoved the door open. Empty. No waiting. Relieved, she grabbed a stall and contemplated as she emptied her bladder. She'd handled the situation. Maybe Cece had been right. Maybe she was close to realizing Trent was an asshole. But he was so, so cute, and he had that smile, and...
Doesn't matter, she muttered. Assholes can be cute.
Still, she thought about it as she washed her hands, as she studied herself in the mirror over the sink. She didn't have Tiffany's long blonde curls or bold blue eyes or killer bod. She was, as far as she could tell, just average. Average brown hair her mother wouldn't let her have highlighted. Just wait until she hit 18 and could do whatever she wanted with her own hair. She wished she hadn't worn it in a ponytail tonight, because it suddenly made her feel juvenile. Maybe she'd cut it. Spike and punk it up. Maybe. Her mouth was too wide, even if Tish said it was sexy like Julia Roberts. Brown eyes, but not deep and dramatic like Mies. Just brown, like her stupid hair. Of course, Tish, being Tish, said they were amber. But that was just a fancy word for brown. That didn't matter either. Maybe she was average, but she wasn't fake. Like Tiffany, whose hair was brown too, under the bleach.
I'm not a fake, she said to the mirror. And Trent Woolworth's an asshole. Tiffany Bryce is a slut bitch. They can both go to hell.
With a decisive nod, she held her head high and walked out of the bathroom. She thought the loud pops, firecrackers, and the screams were from the movie. Cursing herself for stalling and missing an important scene, she quickened her pace. As she neared the theater door, it burst open. The man, eyes wild, took one stumbling step before he fell forward. Blood. Was that blood? His hands clawed at the green carpet, the carpet where red spread, then stilled. Flashes. She saw flashes through the door that was wedged open a few inches by the man's legs. Blasts and blasts. Screams. And people, shadows and silhouettes falling, running, falling. And the figure, dark in the dark, walking methodically up the rows. She watched, frozen, as that figure turned and shot a woman in the back who was running. She couldn't breathe. If she'd been capable of drawing a breath, it would have expelled in a scream. Part of her brain rejected what she'd seen. It couldn't be real. It had to be like the movie. Just pretend. But instinct kicked in, had her running back to the bathroom, crouching behind the door. Her hands didn't want to work, fumbled on her purse, fumbled on her phone. Her father had insisted on 911 as her first memory code on the phone. Her vision wavered, and her breath came now, came in ragged pants.
911, what is your emergency?
He's killing them. He's killing them. Help! My friends! Oh, God! Oh, God! He's shooting people!
Reed Quartermain hated working weekends. He wasn't crazy about working in the mall either, but he wanted to go back to college in the fall. And college included this little detail they called tuition. Add in books, housing, food, and you had to work weekends at the mall. His parents covered most of the freight, but they couldn't manage it all. Not with his sister heading off in another year, and his brother already 3 years in at American University in D.C. He sure as hell didn't want to wait tables for the rest of his life, so college. And maybe before he donned another cap and gown, he would figure out just what the hell he did want to do for the rest of his life. But summers, he waited tables and tried to look on the bright side. The restaurant's mall location worked okay, and the tips didn't suck. Maybe waiting tables at Manja 5 nights a week with a double shift on Saturdays killed his social life, but he ate well. Bowls of pasta, loaded pizzas, hunks of Manja's renowned tiramisu hadn't put much meat on his long, bony frame, but it wasn't for lack of trying. His father once had hoped his middle child would follow in his football star cleat prints, as his oldest son had, resoundingly. But Reed's complete lack of skill on the field and skinny frame dashed those hopes. Still, standing on a yard of leg by the time he'd hit 16, with a willingness to run all damn day, had made him a minor sort of star on varsity track, so that balanced it out some. Then his sister took the heat off with her fierce talent on the soccer field. He served a table of four their starters. Insalata mixta for the mother, gnocchi for the dad, mozzarella sticks for the boy, and fried ravioli for the girl. He flirted harmlessly with the girl, who gave him long, shy smiles. Harmless because he figured she was maybe 14 and off the radar for a college man heading into his sophomore year. Reed knew how to flirt harmlessly with young girls, older women, and pretty much all in between. Tips mattered, and he'd honed the charm for customers after 4 summers of waiting tables. He covered his section. Families, some old couples, a scatter of date night 30-whatevers, probably dinner and a movie, which made him think he'd see if Chaz, assistant manager at GameStop, wanted to catch the late showing of The Island after their shifts. He ran credit cards, chatting up table 3 had bagged him a solid 20%, turned tables, swung in and out of the insane kitchen, and finally hit break time.
Dory, taking my 10.
The head waitress gave his section a quick scan, gave him the nod. He stepped out of the double glass doors and into the Friday night mayhem. He had considered texting Chaz and taking his 10 in the kitchen, but he wanted out. Plus, he knew Angie worked the Fun in the Sun kiosk on Friday nights, and he could take 4 or 5 of his 10 for some not-so-harmless flirting. She had an off-and-on boyfriend, but the last word he heard said off. He could try his luck there and maybe score a date with somebody whose miserable schedule matched his own. He moved fast on long legs through shoppers, through cliques of teenage girls and the teenage boys who scouted them, around moms pushing strollers or herding toddlers, through the incessant brain-numbing music he no longer heard. He had a mop of black hair, his mother's Italian half. Dory didn't bug him about getting a trim, and his dad had finally given up. His eyes, deep-set, pale green against olive-toned skin, brightened when he saw Angie at the kiosk. He slowed his pace, slipped his hands into his trouser pockets, casual, and sauntered over.
Hey, how's it going?
She flashed him a smile, rolled her pretty brown eyes.
Busy. Everybody's going to the beach but me.
And me.
He leaned on the counter with its display of sunglasses, hoping he looked smooth in his uniform of white shirt, black vest, and pants.
I'm thinking of catching the island. It's got a 10:45 last show. It's almost like a trip to the beach, am I right? Want in?
Oh, I don't know.
She fussed with her hair, a beachy blonde that went with the golden tan he suspected she got from the self-tanner in another display.
I do kind of want to see it.
Hope sprang, and Chaz was bumped off his list.
Gotta make some fun, right?
Yeah, but I sort of told Misty we'd hang after closing.
Chaz jumped back on the list.
That's cool. I was heading down to see if Chaz wanted to catch it. We could all go.
Maybe.
She flashed that smile again.
Yeah, maybe. I'll ask her.
Great. I'm heading down to see Chaz.
He shifted to give more room to the woman waiting patiently while her kid, another who hit about 14, tried on half a zillion pairs of sunglasses.
You can text me either way.
If I could have two pairs, the girl began, checking herself out in a pair with metallic blue lenses. I'd have a spare.
One, Natalie. This is your spare.
I'll text you,
Angie murmured, then shifted to work mode.
Those look awesome on you. Really? Totally,
Reed heard Angie say as he headed off. He quickened his pace. He had to make up time. GameStop buzzed with its usual crowd of geeks and nerds and, for the younger geeks and nerds, the glazed-eyed parents trying to move them along. Monitors previewed a variety of games, the PG variety on the wall screens. The less friendly ones were on individual laptops for use with over-18 ID or with parental supervision. He spotted Chaz, king of the nerds, explaining some game to a confused-looking woman.
If he's into military-style gameplay, strategy, and arc-building, he'd go for it.
Chaz shoved his Coke bottle glasses up on his nose.
It's only been out a couple weeks.
It seems so violent. Is it appropriate?
16th birthday, you said.
He gave Reed a quick nod.
And he's into the Splinter Cell series. If he's good with those, he'd be good with this.
She sighed.
I guess boys are always going to play war. I'll take it. Thanks.
They'll ring you up at the register. Thanks for shopping at GameStop. Can't hang, man,
he told Reed as the customer walked away.
Slammed. 30 seconds. Late show, The Island. I'm all about it. Clones, baby. Solid. I've got Angie on the hook for it, but she wants to bring Misty on. Oh, well, I... Don't let me down, man. It's the closest I've got to a date out of her. Yeah, but Misty's a little scary. And... Do I have to pay for her? It's not a date. I'm working on turning it into a date. For me, not for you. You're my wingman, and Misty's Angie's. Clones, he reminded Chaz. Okay, I guess. Geez, I wasn't figuring on-
Great, Reed said before Chaz changed his mind.
Got a book. Meet you there.
He rushed out. It was happening. Group non-date could clear the way for a one-on-one let's hang out, and that opened the door to the possibility of a little touch. He could use a little touch. But right now he had 3 minutes to make it back to Manja, or Dory would scorch his ass. He started to lope when he heard what sounded like firecrackers or a series of backfires. It made him think of GameStop's shooting games. More puzzled than alarmed, he glanced back. Then the screaming started, and the thunder. Not from behind, he realized, from up ahead. The thunder was dozens of people running. He jumped out of the way as a woman careened toward him, racing behind a stroller where the kid inside wailed. Was that blood on her face?
What?
She kept running, her mouth wide in a silent scream. an avalanche rolled behind her. People stampeding, stomping on discarded shopping bags, tripping over them, and, as some fell, over each other. A man skidded over the floor, his glasses bouncing off to be crushed under someone's foot. Reed grabbed his arm.
"What's happening? He's got a gun! He shot! He shot!"
The man shoved to his feet, ran on in a limping sprint. A couple of teenage girls ran weeping and screaming into a store at his left. And he realized the noise, gunfire, came not only from in front of him, but also from behind him. He thought of Chaz, a 30-second sprint behind him, and his restaurant family, double that ahead.
"Hide, man," he muttered to Chaz. "Find somewhere to hide." And he ran toward the restaurant.
The cracking, popping sounds went on and on, seeming to come from everywhere now. Glass shattered and crashed. A woman with a bloodied leg huddled under a bench and moaned. He heard more screams, and worse, the way they cut off like a sliced tape. Then he saw the little boy in red shorts and an Elmo t-shirt staggering like a drunk past Abercrombie and Fitch. The display window exploded. People scattered, dived for cover, and the kid fell down, crying for his mother. Across the mall, he saw a gunman. Boy? Laughing as he fired, fired, fired. On the ground, a man's body jerked as the bullets tore into him. Reed scooped up the kid in the Elmo t-shirt on the run, hooking him under one arm like the football he'd never been able to handle. The gunfire, and he would never, never forget the sound of it, came closer. Front and back, everywhere. He'd never make it to Manja, not with the kid. He veered off, running on instinct, did a kind of sliding dive into the kiosk. Angie, the girl he'd flirted with 5 minutes before, a lifetime before, lay sprawled in a pool of blood. Her pretty brown eyes stared at him while the kid hooked under his arm wailed.
"Oh God, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, oh God."
The shooting wouldn't stop, wouldn't stop.
"Okay, okay, you're okay. What's your name?"
"I'm Reed. What's your name?"
"Brady. I want Mommy."
"Okay, Brady. We're going to find her in just a minute. But now we have to be really quiet. Brady, how old are you?"
"This many."
He held up four fingers as fat tears splashed on his cheeks.
"That's a big guy, right? We have to be quiet. There are bad guys. You know about bad guys?"
With tears and snot running down his face, eyes huge with shock, Brady nodded.
"We're going to be quiet so the bad guys don't find us. And I'm going to call for the good guys. For the police."
He did his best to block the boy's view of Angie. Did his best to block his own mind from the idea of her. Of her and death. He yanked open one of the sliding doors for storage. Shoved out stock.
"Climb in there, okay? Like hide and seek. I'm right here, but you get in there while I call the good guys."
He nudged the kid in, got out his phone, and that's when he saw how badly his hands shook.
911, what is your emergency?"
"Down East Mall," he began.
"Police are responding. Are you in the mall?"
"Yeah. I've got a kid with me. I put him in the stock cabinet in the Fun in the Sun kiosk. Angie, the girl who worked it, she's dead. She's dead. God. There are at least two of them shooting people."
"Can you tell me your name?"
"Reed Quartermain."
"Okay, Reed. Do you feel you're safe where you are?"
"Are you fucking kidding me?"
"Sorry. You're in a kiosk, so you have some cover. I'm going to advise you to stay where you are, to shelter in place. You have a child with you?"
"He said his name's Brady, and he's 4. He got separated from his mother. I don't know if she's..."
He looked around, saw Brady had curled up. Eyes glazed over as he sucked his thumb.
"He's probably, you know, in shock or whatever.
Try to stay calm, Reed, and quiet. The police are on scene.
They're still shooting. They just keep shooting. Laughing. I heard him laughing.
Who was laughing, Reed?
He was shooting. The glass exploded. The guy on the ground, he kept shooting him and laughing. Jesus God.
He heard shouting. Not the screams, but like war cries. Something tribal and triumphant. And more shots. Then
it stopped. The shooting stopped.
Stay where you are, Reed. Help is coming to you. Stay where you are.
He looked down at the boy again. The glassy eyes met his. He said,
Mommy.
We're going to find her in a minute. The good guys are coming. They're coming.
That was the worst part, he'd think later. The waiting, with the smell of gunfire burning the air, the calls for help, the moans and sobbing, and seeing the blood on his own shoes of the girl he would never take to the movies.
Chapter 2. At 7:25 on July 22nd, Officer Essie McVee finished the on-site report on a fender bender in the parking lot of the Downeast Mall. No injuries, minimal damage, but the driver of the Lexus got pretty aggressive with the trio of college girls in the Mustang convertible. Though the Mustang was clearly at fault, the weeping 20-year-old driver admitted it by backing out of the space without checking. The hotshot and his mortified date in the Lexus had also clearly had more than a few drinks. Essie let her partner handle the Lexus, knowing Barry would pull out the old women driver's bullshit. She'd ignore that, also knowing Barry would cite the guy on an OUI. She calmed the girls, took statements and information, wrote the ticket. Lexus didn't take kindly to the OUI, or to the cab Barry ordered, but Barry handled it in his aw shucks way. When the radio squawked, she tuned her ear to it. 4 years on the job didn't stop her heart from banging. She jerked around to Barry, saw by his face his ear had been tuned in as well. She turned her head to her mic.
Unit 4-5 is on scene. We're right outside the theater.
Barry popped the trunk, tossed her a vest. Mouth dry as dust, Essie strapped it on, checked her sidearm. She'd never fired it off the range.
Backup's coming, 3 minutes out. SWAT's mobilizing. Jesus, Barry.
Can't wait.
She knew the drill. She'd had the training, though she'd never really expected to use it. Active shooter meant every second counted. Essie raced with Barry toward the wide glass doors. She knew them all and wondered what twist of fate had put her and her partner seconds outside the theater entrance. She didn't wonder if she would get home to feed her aging cat or to finish the book she'd started. She couldn't. Locate, detain, distract, neutralize. She put the scene inside her head before they hit the doors. Theater lobby opening to the main mall, turn right to ticket booth, move to concessions, left to corridor to the three theaters. 911 stated shooter in one, the biggest of the three. She scanned through the glass, went through, tacked left as Barry tacked right. She heard the piped music from the mall, the rumble of shoppers. The two guys at concessions gawked at the pair of cops, weapons drawn. Both shot their hands up. The jumbo soda in the hand of the one on the left hit the counter, smashed and splashed.
Anybody else here?
Barry demanded.
Just Julie in the lockers.
Get her. Get outside. Now. Go. Go!
One of them leaped toward a door behind the counter. The other stood, hands up, still stammering.
What? What? What?
Move!
He moved. Essie turned left, cleared the corner, saw the body face down outside the doors of one and the blood trail behind it.
We got a body,
she told dispatch, and kept moving. Slow. Careful. past the laughter in the theater on her right, and toward the sounds pushing against the door of one. Shots. Screams. She exchanged a look with Barry, stepped over the body. At his nod, she thought, here we go. When they dragged open the theater doors, the sounds of violence and fear flooded out, and the muted light from the corridor slid into the dark. She saw the shooter, male, Kevlar vest, helmet, night vision goggles, an assault rifle in one hand, a handgun in the other. In the instant it took her to register, he shot a male who was fleeing for the side exit in the back. Then he swung the rifle toward the theater doors and opened fire. Essie dived for cover behind the wall behind the last row, saw Barry take a hit in the vest that flung him back and down. Not center mass, she told herself as adrenaline pumped through her. Not center mass because, like Barry, the shooter wore a vest. She sucked in three quick breaths, rolled, and to her shock saw he was charging up the sloping aisle toward her. She fired low, hips, crotch, legs, ankles, and just kept firing even when he went down. She had to shove aside the instinct to go to her partner, pushed herself to the shooter. Shooter, down! Keeping her weapon trained on him, she pulled the pistol out of his hand, slapped her foot on the rifle he'd dropped. Officer down. My partner took a hit. We need medical. God, multiple gunshot victims. We need help here. We need help. Reports of another active shooter, possibly two or more in the mall area. You confirm one shooter down? He's down. She scanned his lower body, the mass of blood. He's not getting up. Even as she said it, the shooter's harsh, rapid breaths went out. He had a pimple on his chin. She stared at it until she could lift her head, until she could look at what he'd done. Bodies, splayed in the aisle, slumped in the seats, crumpled in the narrow spaces between rows where they'd fallen or tried to hide. She'd never forget it. When a quad team burst through the theater doors, she held up a hand. Officer McVee, shooter's neutralized. My partner. As she spoke, Barry coughed, moaned. She started to straighten from her crouch, swayed as her head swam. You hit, McVee? No. Bearing down, she went to Barry.
Next time I bitch about how hot and heavy these vests are, slug me,
he hissed in a breath.
Hurts like a motherfucker.
She swallowed bile, took Barry's hand.
Would have hurt more without it.
You got him, Essie. You got the bastard.
Yeah. She had to swallow again, hard, but she nodded.
I think he's a kid. Barry, he's not alone.
More cops poured in, and medical first responders. While other police units rushed into the mall hunting for the other shooter or shooters, Essie worked with Barry to clear the theater's bathrooms, storage area, lockers. You need medical, she told him as they approached the ladies' room.
I'll get it later. 911 caller.
He nodded toward the bathroom door. Essie shoved it open, swept with her weapon, and caught a glimpse of her own face in the mirrors over the sink. Sickly pale, but better than the gray tone under Barry's deep brown skin.
This is the police, Essie called out. Simone Knox? This is the police.
Silence echoed back.
Maybe she got out.
The stall doors stood open, but one hardly more than a crack.
Simone, Essie repeated as she walked over. I'm Officer McVee with the Rock Point Police. You're safe now.
She eased the door open, saw the girl crouched on the toilet seat, her hands pressed to her ears. Simone? Hunkering down, Essie laid a hand on Simone's knee. You're all right now.
They're screaming. He's killing them. Tish, me, my mom, my sister.
Help's here now. We'll find them for you.
Let's get you out of here, okay? You were really smart. You saved lives tonight, Simone, by calling for help.
Simone looked up then, huge brown eyes drenched with tears and shock.
My phone died. I forgot to charge it, and it died. So I hid in here.
That's good. That's fine. Come on with me now. I'm Officer McVee. This is Officer Simpson.
The man ran out and fell. The blood. I saw. Tish and me are in the movie. My mom and sister are shopping.
We're going to find them for you. She put an arm around Simone, helped her down, helped her out. You're going to go with Officer Simpson, and I'm going to go find your mom and your sister and your friends.
Essie.
You're hurt, Barry. Take the kid. Get her checked out.
She led the girl down the corridor past the theaters. The situation report on her radio claimed 2 more shooters were down. She hoped that was all of them, but she needed to be sure. But when Barry took over, steering Simone toward the glass doors and the flashing lights of cop cars and ambulances, Simone stopped, looked directly into Essie's eyes.
Tulip and Natalie Knox. Mi-Hee Jung and Tish Olsen. You have to find them. Please. Please find them.
Got it. On it.
Essie headed the opposite way. She didn't hear gunfire anymore, and somebody, thank Christ, had shut off the music. Her radio crackled about areas cleared, calls for medical assistance. She stopped, stared at the mall she'd shopped in, wandered in, grabbed her first meal in for as long as she could remember. It would take time, she thought, almost numb, to clear the dead, to treat and transport the wounded, to take statements from those who'd escaped injury. Physical injury, she corrected. She doubted anyone who lived through this night would come through unscathed. Paramedics poured in now, but there were so many beyond their help. A woman with blood running down her arm cradled a man, beyond help, in her lap. A male in a Red Sox jersey lay face down. She could see gray matter in his head wound. A female, early 20s, sat weeping in front of Starbucks, her apron spattered with blood. She saw a little pink sneaker, and though she prayed the girl who'd lost it found safety, it wrenched her heart. She saw a man, early 20s, late teens, stagger out of GameStop. His thick glasses sat askew over eyes as dazed as a dreamer's.
Is it over?
He asked her.
Is it over?
Are you injured?
No. I banged my elbow.
Those dazed eyes skimmed over her, then over the bleeding, the dead.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez. In the back room. I got people in the back room, like they said to do if they're in the back room.
Just hold on a minute. She turned away to use her radio, to ask if she could lead a group out and to what checkpoint. What's your name? She asked him.
I'm Chaz Bergman. I'm like the manager on duty tonight.
Okay, Chaz, you did good. Let's get your people out now. There are officers outside who'll take your statements, but let's get everybody outside.
I've got a friend, Reed. Reed Quartermain. He works at Manja, the restaurant. Can you find him?
I'll find him. Essie added him to her list.
Is it over?
Chaz asked again. Yes, she told him, knowing it for a lie. For everyone touched by the violence that day, it would never be over. Reed had Brady on his hip when he spotted some of the Manja crew. Some sat on a curb holding each other. Rosie, still in her cook's apron, covered her face with her hands.
Eat that pasta, she always said to him. Fatten you up, skinny boy.
You're okay. You're okay,
Reed closed his eyes as he started to crouch down to her. She leaped up, wrapped her arms around him.
You're not hurt.
Rosie cupped Reed's face. He shook his head.
Is everybody okay?
Rosie let out a sound like something tearing.
He came in and...
Rosie broke off as she registered the boy Reed held.
We'll talk about it later. Who is this handsome fellow?
This is Brady.
Not everyone was okay, Reed thought.
We, hung out together. I need to help him find his mom.
And call his own, Reed thought. He'd texted her from inside, told her he was okay, not to worry. But he needed to call home.
The good guys came, Reed said.
Yes, they did.
Rosie worked up a smile with tears flowing over it.
I want mommy.
I'm going to ask one of the cops to help.
Reed straightened again, walked toward a cop, a girl cop, because he thought Brady might go with a woman.
Officer, can you help me? This is Brady, and he can't find his mom.
Hey, Brady. What's your mom's name?
Mommy.
What's your daddy call her?
Honey?
Essie smiled.
I bet she has another name.
Lisa, honey.
Okay. And what's your whole name?
I'm Brady Michael Foster. I'm 4 years old. My daddy is a fireman, and I have a dog named Mac.
A fireman? And what's his whole name?
He's Michael, honey.
Okay. Hold on a minute.
Firefighters were among the first responders, so Essie tracked one down. I need a Michael Foster. I've got his son.
Foster's one of mine. You've got Brady? Is he hurt?
No.
His mother's en route to the hospital. 2 shots in the back. Fuck me. Foster's looking for the boy now. He didn't know they were here until our paramedics found Lisa.
He rubbed his hands over his face.
Can't say if she'll make it. Here he comes.
Essie saw the man rushing through the shell-shocked crowd. Compact build, brown, close-cropped hair. His body jerked, sagged, then shifted direction as he ran toward his son. In Reed's arms, Brady let out a squeal.
Daddy!
Michael grabbed his son from Reed, folded him in, ran kisses over his head, his face.
Brady, thank God! Thank God! Are you hurt? Did anybody hurt you?
Mommy fell down and I couldn't find her. Reed found me, and he said we had to be real quiet and wait for the good guys. I was real quiet, like he said, even when he put me in the cupboard.
Michael's eyes swirled with tears when they met Reed's.
You're Reed?
Yes, sir.
Michael shot out a hand, gripped Reed's.
I'm never going to be able to thank you. I've got things to say to you, but...
He broke off as his mind cleared enough to notice the blood on Reed's pants and shoes.
You're hurt.
No, I don't think... It's not mine. It's not...
Words dried up.
Okay. Okay, Reed, listen, I've got to get Brady out of here. Do you need help?
I have to find Chaz. I don't know if he's okay. I have to find him.
Hold on.
Michael shifted Brady on his hip, pulled out his radio.
I want mommy.
Okay, pal, but we're going to help Reed out.
While Michael talked into the radio, Reed looked around. So many lights. Everything bright and blurring.
So much noise. Talking, shouting, crying.
He saw a man moaning, bleeding, on a stretcher being loaded into an ambulance. A woman wearing one shoe and with a slow trickle of blood sliding down the side of her face limped in circles, calling for Judy, until somebody in a uniform led her away. A girl with a long brown ponytail sat on a curb talking to a police officer. She just kept shaking her head, and her eyes, like a tiger color, glinted in the whirling, swirling lights. He saw television vans and more bright lights behind the yellow police tape. People were crowded behind the tape, some of them calling out names. It struck him suddenly and hard. Some of the names they called would never answer again. He started to shake from the inside out. Gut, bowels, heart. His ears started to buzz, his vision blurred.
Hey, Reed, how about you sit down a minute? I'm going to find out about your friend.
No, I need to...
He saw Chaz coming out with a group of people, with cops moving them along.
Jesus, Jesus, Chaz!
He shouted it like one of the people behind the police tape, and sprinted. On the curb, Simone waited to feel her legs again. To feel everything again. Her body had gone numb, like someone had given her a full-body shot of Novocaine. Your mom and sister are okay. She heard Officer McVee's words, tried to feel them.
Where are they? Where are they?
They're going to bring them out soon. Your mom has some minor injuries. Minor, Simone. She's fine. They got inside one of the shops.
Got to safety.
Your mom got some cuts from flying glass and hit her head, but she's fine, okay? All Simone could do was shake her head.
Mom hit her head.
But she's going to be fine. They got to safety and they're coming out soon.
Me. Tish.
She knew. She knew by the way Officer McVee put an arm around her shoulders. She couldn't feel it, not really. Just the weight. The weight. Me's on her way to the hospital. They're going to take good care of her, do everything they can.
Me. He shot her?
Her voice spiked, stabbing her own ears.
He shot her?
She's going to the hospital, and they're waiting to take care of her.
I had to pee. I wasn't there. I had to pee. Tish was there. Where's Tish?
We have to wait until everyone's out and everyone's accounted for. Simone kept shaking her head.
No, no, no. They were sitting together. I had to pee. He shot me. He shot her. Tish, sitting together.
She looked at Essie and knew. And knowing caused her to feel again. To feel everything. Reed caught Chaz in a bear hug, felt at least some of the world was right again. They stood gripping each other in front of the girl with the long brown ponytail and tiger eyes. When she let out a wordless, keening wail, Reed dropped his head onto Chaz's shoulder. Inside the wail, he knew, was a name that would never answer again. They couldn't make her go home. Everything was jumbled and tangled together, but she knew she sat in a hospital waiting room on a hard plastic chair. She had a Coke in her hands. Her sister and their father sat with her. Natalie curled against Dad, but Simone didn't want to be held or touched. She didn't know how long they'd waited. A long time? 5 minutes? Other people waited too. She heard numbers. Different numbers. 3 shooters. 86 injured. Sometimes the number of injured went up, sometimes down. 36 dead. 58. Numbers changing. Always changing. Tish was dead. That wouldn't change. They had to wait in the hard chairs while somebody picked glass out of her mother's head and treated the cuts on her face. She had an image of that face in her head, all those little nicks, and the face pale, pale, pale under the makeup. Her mother's blonde hair, always perfect, bloody and tangled. They'd brought her out on one of those rolling stretcher things with Natalie clinging to her hand and crying. Natalie didn't get hurt because Mom had shoved her into the shop and Mom had fallen. Natalie pulled and dragged her inside and behind a display counter of summer tanks and tees. Natalie was brave. Simone would tell her she was brave when she could speak again.
But now they had to get the glass out of her mother's head and examine her because she'd hit her head, too, and it had knocked her out for a couple minutes. Concussion.